Hello and welcome to the Coast to Coast College Admissions Podcast. Each week, we talk about different college admissions topics and answer those tough questions you may be dealing with concerning getting into the college of your choice. We know how difficult this process can be, so each week, we try and make it easier to navigate. Now, here's your host, Anna Wren and Mark Huffer.
Hi, everybody. Hope you're all having a wonderful week. This is Anna Wren and
Mark Huffer.
And we're so excited to have you guys here for the Coast to Coast College Admissions Podcast, where we will be talking about rankings today, which is quite a controversial topic, right, Mark?
Absolutely. I think if there's one thing that I think all educational counselors run into is the student who comes for the first conversation and they have their list of colleges they're interested in, and it basically is pulled right from the national rankings.
Yes, and there's actually quite a lot of rankings out there. So why don't we clarify first, like, which one most people use, which I think is U.S. News and World Report. Is that what you're talking about too?
Yeah, usually the U.S. News and World Report, their top 100 is the most commonly used and I think cited in publications, and often the one that I think parents and students are first likely to turn to.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, maybe you have some stories too, and we can open with some anecdotes before we dive in. But I mean, for the most part, I get families that are very much, oh, you know, I want my kid to be happy wherever. But sometimes what shocks me is I'll have a student come in and he's like, I only want to go to top 50 schools. And those schools I go to are based on rank. I don't care about anything else. So do you have those instances pop up, and how do you handle them, and what do you say?
Absolutely. I think it's more, it's very common that a student will come in, and this happened a couple weeks ago, and she sat down and she, I told her to bring a list of the colleges she was initially thinking about applying to. And it honestly was the first 10 schools that were on the U.S. News and and I asked her why. And she said, well, these are the top schools in the country, and I want to make a good living, and I want my parents to be proud. Mm-hmm. And those top 10 schools represented how she was going to achieve that. And that I was very sad to hear that was the way she came to deciding which school she was going to focus on.
It is. But I do understand, like, when students say that, at the same time, depending on their background, you know, success or return on investment can be an important factor for these kids and sometimes their families as well.
Absolutely. I mean, as you know, and I think we talked about in other podcasts, the ROI or return on investment is becoming one of the prime indicators of success for a college, and also how a student actually is evaluating which colleges they are looking at.
Absolutely. So in addition, but there are actually more rankings out there. Now that we've brought up ROI, you know, Forbes actually has a really great list on ROI.
I think you mentioned that, man, that's one thing to consider. U.S. News and World Report is only one measure, and one measure of what is considered a successful college, and their ranking is only one of the ranking systems out there. Like you said, Forbes is another one.
And I know Washington Monthly is another one as well, but we'll dive in and talk about each of these rankings in a second. So why do you think it is so controversial, you know, in terms of ranking schools, and what is the issue, do you think, that relates to it?
So you know, I'm also a researcher and a scientist, Anna, and one of the things that is very difficult for me is to look at how, and it's called a methodology that is used to identify the quality and the payoff of an educational system that some of these systems use. So in U.S. News and World Report, they use a couple of what are called metrics to identify, and they rank certain qualities of schools and certain tangibles and intangibles to identify where these schools rank with each other. But as with any system, the questions that you ask and the quality of those questions and how you obtain the information directly influence what kind of an answer you get. And I think more than any other system, I think these college rankings are becoming called into question.
And I think they should be. So, you know, in terms of what U.S. News and Report is gathering, it's based on a few different factors, like you'd mentioned. And it can be anything from like graduation rates to standardized test scores. But I was recently at a conference and I was talking with a Harvard alum, and she was saying how she gets calls, you know, and I don't know if you get this with your alma mater too, where it's that time of year, you know, give back to the school and the community. And they had told her, you know, in order for Harvard to stay well-ranked, if you will, then all it really requires is that each alumni donate even just $5 or $10, because it's not necessarily how much is donated, but really like what percentage of the alums give money. Have you heard of that?
Absolutely. Matter of fact, when you look at the, if you look under the hood of U.S. News and World Report's metrics and their methodology, you'll find out that 5% of their rankings are based on the alumni giving rate. So they have established and they believe that that, much like you said, how much and how what percentage of alumni give back to a school is directly related to the ranking of other universities. So if you believe that, and that's one of those things that you should consider an element of success. But that issue alone has been one that's been called into question.
I agree, especially if they're telling alums, oh, you just have to donate $5. and it's all for the rankings, which I think is questionable. But there's also some other factors that go into it. And you can, do you want to talk a little bit more about that? And which ones you think might be important?
You bet. Some of the ones that, some of the metrics that are used for U.S. News and World Report, one of the main pieces that they use are questionnaires that are sent out to the schools themselves. And that information is self-reported by schools. And U.S. News and World Report will be the first one to admit that verification of that information is not always done, and sometimes it's impossible. Some of the information that they're provided is not something that they can actually check on. And so they trust schools to provide that. And then there are external organizations which provide information about their views of the college. Those things like industry and other universities are actually used in part of the evaluation system. And they even use other individuals such as high school counselors. And they also, like you say, when they check in with alumni, they often will use some of that information that's obtained through the phone calls and put that also into the ranking system as well.
Absolutely. And, you know, but there's also ones that I think are important. Like, for example, student to faculty ratios. I know that some students can thrive just as well in a large environment, but I would also say that for a lot of students, you know, being taught by professors versus teaching assistants and having small classroom sizes can be really beneficial to their learning experience. So do you think that there is some merit in the rankings?
So I will ask you, Anna, a question as well, because how many students, and I have a lot of these, who after they go to college and they find out that they've never, you know, they don't get a chance to sit down with their professor. They've gone to a big state school because of many other factors, and it might even be ranking. But they find out that their educational environment, how often and how available their professors are, how their TAs are available and how often, how small their class sizes are. These are important things in how their education feels, but not always the most important in rankings. When you sit down with students who, after after they've gone to college. Is that a common occurrence for you as well?
I would say it is. And I wish sometimes, you know, they tell me, oh, I've done my research, you know, and sometimes they don't do enough of their research before they get there. But, you know, I think you do have to do a bit of soul searching, if you will, and really understanding what you need before you really decide on a school. Because like you said, I mean, they are there, even at the school I went to, you know, professors are available, but it's not like they're always, it's not like high school where they're always reaching out their hands. You have to take more of an initiative to build those relationships or ask about office hours. Because I believe most schools, professors are required to have like maybe at least 2 office hours a week, sometimes 4, but they don't always publicize it. So, you know, I think, you know, but I do think that that really can shape the learning experience, if you will, right? I think that can be a contributor to success. And I do think it's a shame that things like that aren't necessarily evaluated.
I couldn't agree more. I you know, there are some characteristics of colleges that I think would be really valuable. You know my fascination with food and and how much I think that it actually has an impact on the quality of a student's life at college. And I often kid about, do you know where the best grilled cheese sandwich is available on campus? And, you know, that's actually something that I think, as silly as that sounds, you know, I often ask students who have gone to a college, I'll ask them about the food and, you know, do you know where the best grilled cheese sandwich is made on campus? And even though those things seem kind of silly, it actually has such an impact on the overall feel of a school. And those are things that I pass on to students who are looking at those particular schools as well, because they're not published and they are not part of the ranking.
That's true. And I think those little factors do go into, you know, finding that best fit as well, you know, like food or even weather. and I have something to say about that a little later on too, a funny anecdote from a student. So I think we understand a little bit, you know, why are rankings challenged? It's, I think, because, you know, not all the factors are necessarily, I guess we would, maybe you can disagree, necessarily as important as others that aren't considered.
Yeah, I think that's one of the hard things. And I think that's the reason why it's nice to have a couple of different ranking organizations out there. What it basically comes down to, how do you define a successful educational environment? And I think that really stems from the question of how do you define success? And in some cases, U.S. News and World Report, they've identified that these are measures of success and are part of their definition. Whereas I think the Washington Monthly and Forbes, they have defined what successful education is in a very different way. Forbes, I think in particular, they are very focused now on their rankings. They want them to directly reflect return on investment and what are students actually getting out of college, as opposed to U.S. News and World Report, they're looking at a ranking from a very different perspective.
Right, like such as what kind of students the school is attracting. Yep. And I would say another one similar to Forbes is PayScale, actually. And I think one of the things that's interesting as you talk about return on investment, you know, we automatically think, well, how much is it how much money you make out of college? But I think also to take into account, how much did you borrow to go to college? And because that's a real concern for this generation, you know. And then you talk about salary and then you think, oh, well, not just immediate, but over time as well. So I think they offer an interesting ROI ranking in addition to, you know, some of the other rankings like Forbes out there.
I couldn't agree more. I think one of the characteristics or one of the metrics that I think is becoming more important and rightfully so for students and parents is, how much money does it cost to go into the school? How much debt are you graduating with? And how long does it take you to, you know, basically pay that debt back? And I think that measure is something that directly has an influence on your life immediately after college and in your professional life. And I think that's one of those factors that would be characterized as a successful component and a successful metric.
I think that's great. I don't know of any ranking that does all of that right now. Yeah. You should create one, Mark.
Oh, yeah. In my spare time.
with all the spare time that you have, right?
Exactly.
When you're not eating chocolate or other good stuff. And then, you know, we had brought up Washington Monthly as well. What do you think is interesting about that ranking, since it's not, I don't believe it's heard of as much as necessarily U.S. News and Report or Forbes?
You bet. One of the things I really appreciate about Washington Monthly's ranking system is they're very open and they're very transparent about what their philosophy is. They basically say, we are defining success using these metrics or this analysis. And they basically have three categories, and that's social mobility. It's basically how are they recruiting and how are they graduating students from the entire income spectrum? How are they encouraging low income students to come to their school, and how are they supporting them to be successful? Another one of their categories and metrics include research and those things. What kind of things are they doing to provide incredible scholarships and PhDs, and how do they support that kind of work? And then the last one is service, which, you know, what I think is as an educator, it's that value add that isn't often talked about in education, and it's basically service. How are they encouraging students to give back to the school and their communities? What are they doing to make the world a better place? Now, that is not anywhere in U.S. News and World Report's metrics for ranking. Personally, I think it's a great part of identifying and defining success and a successful education. And I think it's valuable to a lot of students and a lot of parents, but it's not everybody's definition of success. So I think here again, it's great to have an additional organization for determining rank.
I would agree. And I think as the world changes, right, the definition of success really varies, you know, and it's not necessarily just on the money, right? Because I think you'll agree that, you know, as we get older, money isn't everything. And, you know, schools that are able to provide really interesting opportunities for students should be considered. And I don't think there is as much talk about, for example, ranking based on research or service. So I think that is like a really interesting ranking with the Washington Monthly. And maybe, you know, hopefully this will give it a little more exposure and help people evaluate additional factors as it relates to success.
I couldn't agree more with that. And it's directly related to, I've talked with you about this in the Harvard Grant study, which is a very, you know, it's a 75 year long-term study on health, happiness, and success. And the first thing that they identify with what is a life success, they highly recommend that the first thing you do is do not focus on money, power, or fame. And I think if we're going to look at college rankings, you know, how much money you make is not necessarily something that we need to focus on if we're going to define success as a lifelong endeavor.
I agree. And, you know, as my husband likes to put it, you know, it's more than just that ROI. It's really learning opportunities too, and not just learning in the classroom, but learning from your peers as well. So, you know, diversity and things like that would play into it too.
Agreed. And I think you bring up a point that is, you have to actually define ROI. What is your return on investment, or what is the most important return on your investment? You have to do that personally and as a family. And I think that is something that is not represented in most of the ranking systems.
So I think for our families out there, they really need to take some time to think about, well, what is success for them? Because that's going to vary from person to person.
Oh, absolutely. I think, like you mentioned, over time, and I think as a society, we're actually seeing kind of, you know, over history, you can see what society identifies as most important to them and what they are defining as success. I think we've all, even in the most recent history, we've identified that there was a period in time that financial gain was absolutely the defining factor of success. And I think we are now reevaluating what is most important as people find out that people and relationships actually make their life more full.
Interesting. So now that we're talking about rankings and we know that, oh, they can be hard to evaluate sometimes, why the big hype over rankings? Who cares about them anyway, right?
Agreed. Well, I think there are different groups, and that's one of the things I think, even when we do these podcasts, we have different people who listen to them, and I think they all have different definitions of success. And so I think the most common people who are you know, interested about these rankings, or even what people think about these rankings, the most common groups are parents and students. I think other colleges might be thrown in there as well. And then they're also hiring the businesses who hire students when they graduate, and those people who are going out into the professional field. So I think those are three of the main groups.
Absolutely. And, you know, in terms of, like, for you personally, who do you find are the ones that really care the most about rankings? Is it your parents, or is it students for where you work?
It's interesting. You know, I think the more I look at that, and the more students and parents and businesses that I talk to, it's interesting. It's almost like a snake chasing its tail, in that one view influences another, and it kind of feeds back on itself. So I think we've actually got this system now where it's so out of balance, and the rankings are taken to the extreme, that I think the most important of those is the most important person in that equation is how are parents actually positioning their views, and those views are basically influencing how students look at colleges.
I think you do bring up a valid point. And, you know, I do have parents that, you know, do care, and they're like, well, instead of applying to the hardest school to get into, should we aim for the best school, but that you have the best odds of getting into? And I think that's where rank and prestige kind of still play a factor in that. But I've also had students where parents were both Ivy, and, you know, the kid also wants to be Ivy, even though, you know, so far what I think he's discovered that is that he actually likes, larger state schools. But I think subtly, you know, and his parents aren't even encouraging him or giving him pressure to, you know, look at schools that are, you know, so competitive and well-ranked, is they just want him to be happy. So I think the times are changing as well. And sometimes the students are bringing it on themselves.
Anna, you mentioned early on that I think parents, they just want the best for their kids, and they want them to be successful. And I think their view of how that can be accomplished is driven by social influences and things like the ranking list and who they talk to. And I think that's where the rankings often come into play. And students hear that. And like you say, if the parents have gone to an Ivy League and have been successful, they equate that list in Ivy League with success without actually looking into, like you say, best fit for them. One of the increasing influences, I think, on how parents perceive that equation is they believe that Ivy League schools and top-tier schools and the most highly ranked schools directly influence which companies and what kind of a professional pay scale is going to be available to their kids when they graduate college. And I, if you look at the statistics, you'll identify quickly. There are companies who, and having been in industry and hired, it isn't as much a matter of where you went to school anymore. I don't care if what the name on your diploma says, as much as what can you actually do. And I know companies that could care less where you went to school, but they care very deeply about what kind of work you're going to do for them.
Absolutely. And I feel like that's an often controversial topic as well, is how do employers perceive it and, you know, how rankings are important. But from what I've researched and read as well, it's not necessarily a direct correlation that just because you go to a higher ranked school that, you know, you are necessarily more successful in the workplace or more likely to be hired. And I don't know if you've had this, you know, I have a few friends that did go to Ivy and some other nice schools. And I think when you're first starting out and you put it on your resume, sometimes it might warrant a second glance, or maybe you'll get like a chance to be interviewed, but it doesn't necessarily mean you'll get the job or anything like that. You know, it's still up to other skills and your experience, especially over time, that matters a lot more than a school's rank. And I think the other thing to consider is that alumni networks are really strong, and that sometimes can play more of a role than, say, rank would.
I couldn't agree more. There's when you talk about getting the door open, I think there is some credibility to the reality when somebody looks at your resume and they see a top-tier school. It may actually open the door to start the conversation, but that conversation with industry and people who are going to be interviewing you will quickly turn to what can you actually do and what have you done. So I think you're right. It might open the door, but it sure isn't going to give you a seat at the table.
Absolutely. And I, like, my brother works in finance, and he's met people from all different kinds of educational backgrounds. And he does tell me sometimes, and he's like, it doesn't matter once you get to this level, where you went. It's just about what you can accomplish. So even for like, I don't know if you work with some graduate students, but, you know, does it really matter where you go to school if you go to graduate school?
Well, one of the things I think there's more research that's shown that it really doesn't matter necessarily where you go to undergraduate school, but being successful and finding a right fit school where you actually develop yourself and your skills in an extraordinary way sets you up in a very credible way to apply to prestigious graduate schools. And a lot of times when you sit down for your graduate school interview, it is going to be very similar to a professional interview in industry. It's not necessarily where you went to school. It's what have you done? What do you know? And what can you do? And they will basically identify what is your potential here at our school for graduate work. And I think very much, it's very similar to the industry interviews that you'll give later on in your professional career.
I would agree with that. And I think sometimes that's why I warn undergraduate students from directly applying to graduate schools right afterwards, because sometimes they do lack that professional experience that the graduate school programs are looking for. And so I think they often think, and I don't know if you really think this too, but having little experience or no experience in being accepted by graduate schools, depending on what you're studying, is often the exception, and is not something that students can necessarily count on.
I completely agree. One of the interesting and one of the important things, I think, when we have this discussion about ranking is we basically, and the realities in the United States, not all students in U.S. colleges come from the U.S. And their home after attending college in the US is not necessarily in the States. So I know you've got some background and some experience in working with students who are not part of the US, US high school system, but they come to school in the US looking for the best quality colleges, and their association with ranking is very different. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, absolutely. So I do work with students that are from Asia, specifically China. And for them, it does actually matter. And I think that's where, like, if you've worked with Asian families, rankings are very much a part of the discussion. Where, you know, depending on where they go to school, when they go back, it does influence how competitive they are in the job market, as in addition to the type of salary that they can command once they get back home. So it's a little different working with international students because that is a real concern for them. It's not necessarily just about best fit in terms of pressure for ROI. And because China has, or now it doesn't have the one child law anymore, but because it did have that for so long, and there is this cultural reliance on the parents for their one child to support them, then it becomes even more stressful for a student when they are picking schools because they do have to worry about, well, how much money am I going to make when I come out of school so that I can take care of my family afterwards? So, but at the same time, I had this interesting thing happen where I was working with an international and we're trying to decide where to early decision. And in the beginning, we had just started working and they also had a counselor from their high school, which had told them that it was less competitive to apply to one of the Ivies, but it happened to be in a very cold climate.
Yep.
And so they hadn't done much research at the time and they were like, oh, I'm just going to early decision here. And I cautioned them against it and I was like, you know, I know you haven't been to the U.S. yet, but that is a really cold location. You will be living in snow for like half of the year. And this girl was coming from a very warm part of China, and she really preferred a warm environment. And I was like, I don't know that it makes the most sense to early decision this school. And I had suggested some other schools at the time, but purely based on rank and the likelihood of getting in, we early decisioned that school. So later on, fortunately, she didn't get accepted to that school. And we were able to take more time and she kind of did a follow up and do more research. And through that, she did realize the value of best fit and was like, oh my gosh, I wish I had listened and done the research and just not just focused only on rank, because there were other schools out there that were comparable in their education, but weren't located in that very cold location. So we found one that she really liked in Texas and some in California as well. And so she's happily a student now in Los Angeles. And she really does value now though, the researching the schools ahead of time and not going purely based on rank, you know, because there are other factors. And she wouldn't be happy going to that Ivy had she been accepted. Whereas I know she is very happy now at the school that she's ended up.
I am so glad that you bring that experience and perspective to the conversation, because I was actually introduced to the like you say, the very true reality of students from Asia and specifically from China and what the rankings mean to them and their professional future when they return. And I had no idea that that was actually how powerful of an influence that was. I also found out that it's not necessarily just Ivy Leagues or rankings. When I talked with people who work specifically with students from China, I found out that it also has to do with familiarity. Is the college well known? When I heard that USC is, the USC and the University of Washington, because they're well known overseas, it's a brand name, those are actually very sought after as well. Can you speak a little bit to familiarity as a driver?
Yes, absolutely. And reputation. So it's really about that school's reputation. And as you put it, their brand. So for example, there are some well-ranked schools, but since they aren't heard of abroad, it's challenged. So for example, I think Wake Forest University offers a great education and it is still a well-ranked school, but students in China will not apply, or very few will apply, just because it isn't as heard of, right? It isn't as well known. So for them to put that on their resume, they feel like, oh, well, I can't necessarily bank on that. What if my future employer doesn't recognize this school? So it's not just rank. It is about how well known it is. And just, you know, being that I am Asian myself, I will share a funny story. My brother, when he was applying for school, he had actually been accepted into an Ivy. And my parents sent the deposit and everything. And then later on, he got off the wait list at a great school. It wasn't a university, though. It was Williams College. And for anyone that follows like liberal arts colleges, it's typically ranked number one in the country. Yep. And for my brother, it was just this thinking that, well, why go to a very well-ranked school, and it was Ivy, when I could just go to the number one school in the country? And so he automatically chose Williams. But for my parents, it was very hard to accept. They supported him. But, you know, then they don't have those bragging rights, or at least they didn't feel they had those bragging rights, because they couldn't say, oh, my son attends an Ivy, because very few people at the time were aware of, you know, Williams College, and that it was a really great school. So people would say, he goes where? So it took them a while, but they were very quick to educate their circle of friends on Williams' reputation. And now they are a very proud supporter of liberal arts colleges. But again, I think universities tend to have a better reputation or are more well-known. And they, you know, there are international rankings, which we haven't talked about yet as well. That kind of weigh into, how well will I be able to market this degree?
Great. Yeah. So we've talked a little bit about the rankings that are used, some of the metrics and the methodology that they use to produce them, who it's important to. And I'm curious, what do you think about how did we actually get to this place where schools and parents and students all have, you know, identified these ranking systems as extremely valuable to them and their future success? And how has that influenced how schools actually work with students?
That is a really great question. So I think part of it has to do with exclusivity, as I think we've kind of alluded to earlier. And, you know, I think acceptance rate really plays into rankings as well, and that almost elitist, I don't know, mentality that we've sort of developed, unfortunately, as it relates to colleges, just because, and unfortunately, like you think about our acceptance rates, they just keep dropping. But I think part of it has to do with, you know, making it easier for students to apply to college. And now that a lot of schools have these marketing departments and things like that, and knowing that acceptance rate can play into rankings, you know, I don't know if you've heard about this, but I think it's a hot topic for discussion is, okay, you're marketing to students also that might not be a good fit for this school, but you are able to kind of lower your acceptance rates and thereby increase your rank. And for me, I think that is very controversial, and I don't know that that is the right way for schools to do that. And I'm not saying every school does that, but it does play a factor. So now that we've created this culture of like, ooh, exclusivity, and it's hard to get in, and, you know, it all feeds into this ranking frenzy. But what are your thoughts?
Well, one of the interesting things that I've heard from those people who are admissions directors at some of the top tier schools, they are actually having to deal with a very different system themselves than just even a few, you know, a half dozen years ago. And what that's been driven by is how much easier it is for students to apply to dozens of schools. And it becomes what acceptance rate has, as you noted, has dropped quite a bit in the last decade. And you can see that trend is dropping lower and lower for some of the top tier schools. And this is actually a math problem. It's not, it's somewhat disingenuous, because what it provides is an inaccurate view that college has become more competitive. Now, what I mean by that is, if you have more people who are applying to school and they have X number of spots, that has not changed. All that does is mean that they have to turn away more students. It doesn't mean that the same students who would have got into the school 10 years ago are different from the same students who are going to get in this year. It just means more people have applied. So that's merely a metric of, and it's a math problem. It's just percentages. So schools are the first one to admit they are overwhelmed with the number of applications that they're getting, because they see so many applications from students who actually, it's not a best fit school. It's just that they are able to apply and they're throwing their hat in the ring. And what that means for the schools, they don't have quite as much, they don't have near the amount of time that they used to really give a personal evaluation on some of these applications.
That's true. And it's a sad thing too, because it's just like an endless cycle, unfortunately.
Yeah. You hear admissions directors talk about stopping the madness.
Yes.
They actually, it makes their work as providers of education and quality education much harder, because they're not able to serve their mission as well as they would if they didn't have the unbelievable avalanche of applications that they have to deal with now.
Absolutely. And, you know, because it is so easy to apply these days for multiple schools, a lot of students and their parents are just like, well, why not?
Yep.
Just try it. You never know. And that does flood our poor admissions people who work so hard to try to find the best class for their schools.
I agree. I think that's one of the things that educational counselors, especially working with the college application process and campaign of their students, the biggest thing that they really can bring to the table is identifying those schools that they really will be successful, and to apply to those schools, not based on rank, but on fit, and more questions that they ask to find the right fit school are going to, you know, pay off in not only the success that they have in college, but the success they have later professionally and in life.
Mm-hmm. And then, so now that we've kind of had this great discussion about rank, what would you say for our audience? What can they take away from this conversation? How should rankings be used, if they can be used?
Absolutely. The rankings provide even the rankings that are called most into question provide information. Information that is valuable to some people might not be valuable to others. So there again, when I sit down with a student, one of the first things I ask them is, you know, define success for define successful college experience first, and then we'll work from there. So if they can identify what they want to have learned and experienced at the end of 4 years, and they can define why they're going to college in the first place, they're basically going to identify the characteristics that we'll look for in the rankings that directly apply to their standard deviation from success, or their definition of success. And we'll find the best fit school for them.
Absolutely. And I think, I don't know if you do use rankings at all in addition to best fit, but I feel like if you are going to look at rankings, like, don't just look at the school itself, right? There's all different kinds of rankings out there, including ones that are best for your program. So if you know what you want to study, maybe look at the different, you know, which programs have the best support for those majors and give the most opportunities, or just even things like the type of experience you want to have. So, you know, is it learning communities, which I think is really beneficial because I lived in a learning community, but or study abroad opportunities or internships or research opportunities, all these things I think you can look at just beyond ROI, because I think they all add value to the type of education you can receive. And I know, for example, like I had one student, not my student, but I was talking with a family friend who, you know, they didn't get in and they were very well qualified for a lot of the higher ranked schools. But they ended up getting a free ride to a decent school as well, you know. And as a result of being accepted there, not only did they get a free ride, but they were part of a special program where they were mentored by top execs in the field that they wanted to study, that the school had kind of put together, you know, specific opportunities for their best students at that school. So I think that also should be weighed into account just in terms of going beyond the rankings. How about you? Have you had any experiences with your students?
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Those things that are beyond the ranking, those things that are, you know, intangible, the things that might not even be able to be measured, like you say, the quality of relationships between other students and professors, those are very hard to put a number on. You can't say, well, you know, relationships, they get a 7. Well, there really isn't a measure for relationships. But there again, as you mentioned, if a student knows that they want to go into engineering, it seems disingenuous to be looking at you know, liberal arts schools that have an outstanding writing program, but no engineering program. So even though the rankings come into play, it may, like you say, be most valuable to identify those schools that if a student knows what kind of things are most important, to start targeting in that way. And the rankings work for that as well because of the information they might provide.
Absolutely. So as we wrap up, what would you say are some good resources for our audience?
Oh boy. There is an author who actually just a book that was just released called Where You Go Is Not Who You'll Be. And it's an antidote to the college admission mania. It's written by a gentleman named Frank Bruni. And he has written this book that came out earlier this year that talks about the realities and the research behind how some of the different ranking lists are developed, and the numbers that in reality in the professional world, like return on investment, if that includes finances that you're able to acquire after entering into a professional field, they basically identify, are there correlations between the rankings and those kind of indicators? And his book is actually one I would recommend to any student or any parent that is really looking into finding a best fit school and why.
And I think, you know, I've heard of this book as well, and I think it's a great read and really helpful. And I've heard that there are additional books and articles that are out now these days to kind of try and stop the madness. So I think for me, if I were to leave our audience with some last thoughts, it's just, you know, take everything with a grain of salt. You know, you're going to look at rankings because it's unfortunately part of the process of looking for college. But as you do, really evaluate the factors that go into the rankings and make sure that those are the ones that align with your values and your definitions of success. And then Mark, what are your lasting thoughts for our audience?
My last thoughts, there's over 3,000 colleges in the U.S., and the philosophy that there are only a few dozen schools that can support you in your education in college in an exceptional way is kind of silly. And I think if you don't look at this equation thinking that there are a couple hundred colleges that can provide you with an outstanding college education and prepare you for success in life, you're just not looking and framing the question in the right way. So I think that would be one of the equations I would leave with.
Such a great point to think about as our students and families embark on the college admissions process. Well, I think we've had a great discussion on rankings today, Mark, and I thank you so much. And I think we've given our audience a lot to think about, you know, and we'll post some links for these different rankings that we've talked about in addition to the book that Mark mentioned. But thanks so much, Mark. This has been great.
Thank you, Anna. It's always wonderful to talk with you, and I hope we have provided some interesting things to think about as students look at the ranking systems that are available to them.
Yes, I think we've given them a plethora of thoughts. But till next time, where we tackle another awesome issue in college admissions, hope you guys have a great week.
All right. Bye-bye, Anna.
Bye, Mark.
Thanks for listening to the Coast to Coast College Admissions Podcast, where we make getting into college easy and fun. Don't forget to go over to iTunes and subscribe to get updated each week when we release a new episode. Also, for more helpful college admissions information, visit our website at www.c2ccollegepodcast.com.